More and more badass women are joining the ranks as highly skilled construction professionals. Construction and renovation projects wouldn't happen without the skills of the various crews involved. As we all know, the skilled trades have been male-dominated for like forever. In this season, I'm highlighting the amazing women doing their thing in the construction sector. Every journey and every story is different, but they are all inspiring. Have a listen as I learn about their stories. Hello to one and all. Today, I have Emily Bila on the show. Emily was raised on an off-grid acreage and was involved in a variety of construction projects from a very young age and pursued a path as a carpenter, getting her Red Seal certification at the age of 23. She recently participated in the Leader in Trades program, formerly the Regional Representative Training through BCCWIT. I mean, BCCWIT, it's quite the mouthful. It really is, but you know, it is what it is. And earlier this year, she planned a try a trade for a day for the local Girl Guide community with some support from fellow tradeswomen. She, like many women I've had on the show, is passionate about advocating for the trades and now holds a position as a trades navigator for student support and engagement at the University of the Fraser Valley. So we'll get into her path to get there throughout our show today. And Emily, really, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and be able to share my perspectives and my journey through the trades.
Excellent. All right, so let's just jump in. I have to know more about this experience of living off the grid. And from what I know a little bit of, you helped to build your family's timber home and all that sort of stuff. So please, like, just living off the grid. I mean, that's a whole other experience I don't know that I would do, but I mean, clearly your family did it and it's sort of some formative sort of impact on your life.
Definitely. So I remember in high school, they used to have provincial exams. Those were your standard assessments. And there was an English 12 exam, maybe it was English 10.
Yeah.
The cue that they gave you to write your essay was, the places we grew up make us who we are. After this exam, most of my classmates went, what the hell was that? That was such a stupid prompt. But for me, I absolutely loved that prompt. And that brought me back straight to my childhood, the childhood that I was still living at that point. And I wrote a story from the perspective of the house and the property that my parents had purchased when I was, 6 or 7 years old.
Wow.
They bought a 36-acre off-grid property that had a little cabin on there that should have been knocked down. All of the joists were rotted out. It was, people were falling through the subfloor. They should have just leveled it and started fresh. As a teacher and a counselor, though, they didn't know what they were doing. So trial and error, my dad bottle jacked the house up, replaced every single joist, lots of concrete. They must have bought the place when I was 6 years old because I've been mixing concrete since I was six. Someone in construction had told my dad, oh, you have a cattle guard. You can't have a concrete truck come over that. So up until I was probably 20, we mixed all of the concrete in a mixer. 5 buckets of Navi-Jack to 1 bucket of Portland cement and some water all put together. So yeah, when I have concrete pour days, I still get transported back to my childhood, and I tell everyone that I'm always excited when it's pour day. I grew up with the whole family. We would have, with this tiny crappy little cabin, we'd have work parties. We had this whole community that would come out. We'd put flooring in, we'd sand the walls, you know, we'd do all the work. We'd have big bonfires and hot dog roasts. So it was always a party. It was always a celebration and building this house. As I grew older, there was always projects that we were working on. When I was 14, 15 years old, we added on a 1700 square foot timber frame addition. And by then I was, you know, pretty capable than a 6 or 8 year old. And I got to mix concrete. We did all the formwork and the layout. We hired a timber framer. They brought the pieces up. We got to assemble them, stand up the bents, and just go from there. I stayed home from school one day or maybe a couple of days to do some flooring. So I really just got to be a part of building the home that my family lived in. And I think that's just so special.
It really
that's probably where my love of construction started from.
Wow.
just building and creating with your friends and family and creating your home. And that's something you can be proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it harkens back to the whole like nostalgia of like barn building in the community and all that kind of stuff. And I know the first house that my husband and I owned, we often had work parties too. Like friends would come over, they would give us a hand, we'd feed them and like beer and
It's the
whatever.
best of times.
And it was like everybody was there for demo day. And let me know when it's demo day, right? Like nobody wants to do all the grunt work, but as soon as demo day was on, everybody was like in like Flynn. It was great. So I didn't do it as a child, but I definitely get a little bit of that from my own experience as well.
Perfect. Yeah, so great. And then the off-grid part, they make their own power with a micro hydro system. And the house runs normal. There's dishwashers, washing machines. My biggest caveat growing up was a teenager. I have curly hair. Sometimes, if we had all of these machines running and draining electricity, I couldn't straighten my hair. And as a teenage girl, that was the worst. If we lived in town, I could straighten my hair. It wouldn't be a problem.
So
I really.
sorry to interrupt. Do you know, like, really how that system works, or you just know that it's there? Like, do you, like, I don't
There
know.
is an intake. We have a little lake. There's an intake. It goes through a pipe. I don't remember the diameter. Through the field, there's a ravine that gives enough drop. Little Pelton wheel comes back up to the house. There's a battery bank, an inverter, all those power things. I'll tell electricians when I talk to them, and I'll say this, and then they go, "Oh yeah, okay, we understand what you're saying." And I go, "That's yeah. If you want to know more, come visit."
Well, that's fascinating. I think that's fantastic.
So again, we just maybe have to monitor if we're, Thanksgiving, you have the oven going and the microwave and try to do the dishwasher and get all the linens ready. You just have to kind of keep an eye on, okay, are we overloading the system? Then let's maybe just
Scale it back a little bit.
be aware.
And then obviously with from the lake, you need to make sure that it's got water in it.
Year round, we've so far, well, fingers crossed, water has never been an issue.
Okay, good.
So that's
And where geographically abouts is the property?
In the Fraser Valley, so
Okay.
kind of Fraser Cascades, lots of ice runoff,
I just wasn't sure if
beautiful
it was
mountains.
located somewhere else. I knew that you're out there now. Cool. Okay, so here you are. You're going through high school with curly hair sometimes, and you've got all this sort of background, sort of experiential knowledge. What made you graduate and then decide to pursue a career in the trades?
So my dream since grade nine was to go live in Germany. My dad's German, I'm half German. And that was my goal. My goal was to graduate a year early and go live in Germany and learn the language. So that's what I did. I had my courses set up in a way that I was able to graduate a year early. PE10 online, house building was my PE10 credits. Physical activity. After graduation, I spent a year living in Bavaria, just half an hour south of Munich. Learned German, traveled around. I came back and was working as a cook in a restaurant kitchen, making a minimum wage, which is probably 8.25 at the time. And my goal was, I'm going to go back to Germany and study to become a teacher because education in Germany was free, and I wasn't about to go thousands of dollars in debt to be a teacher here. And I could speak German then, so it was all good. I was set. Except 8.25 an hour. Even back then, I knew I could make more. So I found a job on Craigslist as a greenhouse construction laborer, essentially. And I started at $15 an hour, which I thought was pretty great. My interview was at Tim Hortons. I showed up probably in a blazer, the one blazer I had, and a pair of jeans and flats, and had the interview. He goes, "Yeah, okay, you got the job. You can come in on Monday." I go, "Okay, what do I need?" He goes, "Pair of steel toe boots." And I went, "What are those?" Because the house and the construction that I grew up doing at my parents' property was all brought to you by Crocs. So
Awesome.
I call my dad. He goes, "How was the interview?" I go, "Well, I got the job. I just need a pair of steel toe boots. Know where I can get a pair of those?" And he goes, "Yeah, I think Mark's Work Warehouse might have them."
That's
So
funny.
That's how I started. I went to Mark's, got myself a pair of steel toes. Someone said, don't buy the cheapest pair. They'll just hurt your feet. So I didn't buy the cheapest pair. And yeah, Monday I showed up to work. They go, you ever driven a scissor lift before? I went, no, sir, I have not. He asks, well, you play video games. It's just like playing video games. And I went, I grew up off the grid without video games. Anyways, we all survived. The machine survived. The job site survived. But it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do have a little something to say about that as far as, health and safety,
Yeah,
whatever.
training. It was a while ago. Things have
Yeah.
changed.
Well, and clear minds prevail now. We probably wouldn't really sign on for that. But yeah, anyway, moving on.
Learn.
So
We learn.
from your greenhouse experiences, you ended up getting your ticket. So me through from,
Yeah.
driving a scissor lift without really any training to
Yeah.
how we got
I'm a
there.
naturally gifted scissor lift operator, I
Just think
guess.
of all the crazy stuff you could do with video games.
Oh, I should try that out. Yeah, so with the greenhouse, again, when you think carpenter, you don't think greenhouses, you think house framing, house construction. So with the greenhouse construction, I gained some really valuable experience in site layout. We're talking 5 to 20 acres of site layout. So repetitive on end and lots of concrete, lots and lots of concrete. Again, childhood, yes, concrete.
All kind of sitting together.
Yeah, and then I remember, there wasn't a lot of skill saw work because, well, sometimes for concrete forming, but usually you're just using impacts and drills and grinders. So when I, after a couple months, my boss goes, well, I'm a carpenter. Do you want to do an apprenticeship to become a carpenter? And I said, well, what's that all about? And he goes, well, you go to school, come back, you make more money. And I said, yep, sign me up. So I remember when I went for my level one, before I went, they're like, you don't know how to cut with the skill saw, do you? I'm like, no, not really. And yeah, my boss took a 2x12 and just drew lines across it and made me cut. And he goes, keep cutting, cut the line, keep cutting. And it was a struggle. But I eventually got it. And that was one thing that was really cool for me to see throughout my apprenticeship. Level one, I struggled. I could not cut very well. By level four, when it comes to cutting our curved stair stringers, we were paired up with a partner. I cut the first step out. It was perfect. My partner went to cut the next one and he goes, hey, Emily, you're better at this than me. Can you do it? I was so proud of myself in that moment and before that, but even that just reinforced that of how far I had come. And that's why one other reason I love trades is it's so easy to see your progression and compare yourself to where you started and see what you have done to improve.
Yeah, well, also, most often for pretty much any trade, you have something that is nothing to begin with. And at the end of the day, the job, the whatever, the project, there's something tangible. Like you could touch it.
I know I did something today because I see it.
It's not just
Yeah.
paper being moved from this side to this side or an email.
How many emails have I responded to today?
I don't even want to. I don't even want to tell you how many emails I've responded to today. Oh my goodness!
How many should I have responded to that I forgot about?
I don't even want to answer that question.
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is a very tangible cause and effect, and yes, you can definitely monitor and see your skills improving along the way. And there's a lot of satisfaction in that, and a lot of empowerment too, because you're getting better.
Totally. It's yeah, very empowering.
So greenhouses, you did some like
So,
what kind of other sort of, as you went through your apprenticeship, I don't
yeah.
know. So for mine, I ended up at three different shops through my apprenticeship. Did you move companies a
I
little bit?
did. So again, the first company I worked for in construction, the greenhouses, they were amazing. I loved them. The boss was awesome. The crew was super supportive. Actually, all I have five, three younger siblings, we all worked there. Because, they had me and they said, are there more of you? And I said, funny, you should ask. Yes. Yeah, so that was just such a great company. However, as I'm going for level two carpentry, I'm realizing that by not framing houses, that was a struggle. So I said, you know what? It's been all fine and dandy, but I need to go elsewhere. Again, another Craigslist job, Tim Hortons interview. This time, the guy There's two of them, one older, one younger. The older guy goes, you know, I didn't want to interview you because you're a girl. But this guy over here said, you know, you should interview her, see what she's about. Well, I got the job. I said, yeah, I'm a girl, and yeah, I can do the job. So I spent 3 months with this company building custom homes, and that was super fun. This was, you know, back in the early 2010s. I built a $2 million home, so that was pretty fancy back then. Lots of fun. You know, did some barns, did some office space renovations, I suppose. And the younger guy who was at my job interview, he was a sub to this company and left very shortly after. I think he was kind of looking for a way out. And yeah, things just turned unprofessional in many, many ways. And I started looking for a way out, even though I was just there for a short time. The next job that we were supposed to go to, he wanted to pay me cash. He wanted me to drive him in my personal vehicle and put the wear and tear on mine. I don't understand. I guess it was more fuel efficient than his truck, but his truck's a write-off. Comments, you know, about women, comments about people of color. I remember one lunch break, he told me, I was raised Catholic, so I was raised with the Bible. And I remember him sitting down at lunch break one day telling me the story of Adam and Eve. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this story. I thought I was. But I learned something new that day. He goes, Adam and Eve had two sons, Cain and Abel. Cain kills his brother Abel. God then curses Cain and all of Cain's descendants, which, according to my boss, are all of the people of color in the world. And that's why all the people of color live in third world countries and experience poverty and drought and all these things. And that's why the white man is above all the people of color. So, you know, I'm kind of just taken aback, but don't really have anything to say to that because I'm shocked. And I went home that night and I said, my dad's white, my mom's brown. And I said, hey, Dad, you know what I learned at work today? Because I'm an apprentice, we're learning every day. Said, I'm inferior to you because of the color of my skin. And he goes, oh, really? Tell me more. And I told him the story. And he goes, if you quit, I can give you work around here until you find a new job. And I said, yeah. Okay, Dad, thanks. Right.
Yeah.
And that's when I put the radiant in-floor heating in their house.
Wow. That's, I wish that I could say that's an anomaly of a story. And the sad truth is that it's not, and it is maybe not that exact story, but iterations of it in, you know, different context, absolutely is, it's not uncommon, which.
Yeah.
We can go down the road and all just, it's so bad, so bad. But, and, you know, and for anybody who's listening right now, I just love the fact that you're like, you know what, this is not working for me. Mm-hmm. And that's unacceptable. And I'm out. Because a lot of people worry and dither and do I make a change? Do I not make a change? Maybe they feel like they're a little bit hamstrung. And in this day and age, especially where there's such a lack of skilled tradespeople out there, if you're not in the right place, there's another job for you.
Someone else will take you.
Within like a day, you can probably find another position. Like, leaving something.
Exactly. And when I've shared this story about right from the get-go, oh, I don't want to hire a girl. Yeah. People go, well, why would you want to work for someone like that? And I go, well, I thought maybe if I worked for someone like that, I could show them what a girl can really do.
Yeah, it's not our job to prove.
But it's not. And again, sometimes it's just not worth it. And you know what? I showed him my work ethic. And then did I quit on him short notice? Yeah. Does he probably never want to hire another woman again? Maybe. But that's not on me.
Doing them a favor. Because why would we want somebody else to work with and for him if they're not going to be treated properly and they're going to be in this environment that's really not cool?
Yeah. So anyways, from there, the heating at my parents' place, I found another job and was at that company for a couple of years. That was great. We did mostly agricultural buildings, so lots of barns, shops, couple of custom homes, some renovations. So just a really great variety. Again, being able to learn this company, yeah, overall really, really good. I was happy there, great experiences. But I eventually chose to leave them because I was looking for a change and I wasn't feeling like I was growing. And an opportunity to come up for me to go work for IATSE in the film and television industry. And that was fun. That was very exciting. They call you a scenic carpenter. So you're an arts and crafts carpenter. You're not actually building a whole house. You just, everything is made to look a certain way. It's all fake, but so fun and so beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's more or less disposable, right? You're not
it is.
For things to last forever. You're building things for...
Exactly. And that was one thing that I did struggle with a bit was, you know, they try to keep doors and walls and different pieces of the sets, but a lot, you know, more so than I think on even most construction sites, I was noticing a lot of waste, and it's tough because you do need somewhere to store all these sets, which comes with its own set of problems. So yeah, again, just learning different techniques. It was my first time in a big kind of shop environment. I was out of the rain. I was protected from the elements. I got fed.
Something to be said for that.
It was all fine and dandy. However, I was commuting out from the Fraser Valley to Vancouver every day. I was working 6 or 7 days a week, and I just did not have any work-life balance. And that ended when I went to level 4 for carpentry. So I stopped working for the union and did my level 4, got that. By the time I came out, the industry had slowed down for a little bit. So from there, I traveled around a little, and then I went into the restoration industry. Hey. And that was a fun one.
Yeah, there's a lot involved with that.
And I was very glad that I had prior experience in new construction to be able to understand how things should have been done and how they might have been done and how I was then going to do them from there.
Perfect. Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, it's amazing that you're able to have this variety of experience that you could pull from in different ways as you sort of grew and morphed in from one sort of job to another. It's all about building upon what your knowledge base is and your skill set is all the way along. There's always chance for learning and growth. And I get that you like preaching to the choir here, you know that as well.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I first got married, I had a crisis. I went, they gave me a certificate, but I don't know everything. What am I going to do now? And then I got comfortable in realizing I'm never going to know everything. No one ever can. Everything, especially carpentry, can be so wide and varied. It is a broad trade. There's so many different things that, you know, I got really good when I was building barns and greenhouses at doing metal shrim, because there's a lot of that.
Yep.
So then on job sites, when we were doing houses, the guys would be like, oh, I've done this once or twice. I went, oh, I know how to do this. So we all have our different skill sets that we're bringing. And yeah, being able to learn from your coworkers is always just, a good time.
Yeah, for sure. So it sounds to me like you had some good experiences with being supported and not over time, and that you've made the appropriate changes when you needed to, whether it's for growth or just maybe the wrong fit, but you know.
Yeah. Time for a change.
Time for a change. You mentioned earlier at this very start of the show the need for steel-toed boots, and it's kind of a little bit segue into something fun that you did recently around PPE, and so personal protective equipment for women. It didn't exist at all for the longest time. You were wearing men's steel-toed boots, you weren't wearing women's stuff, and even like and all that kind of stuff. It's been one of the things that the industry as a whole has needed to address to be able to provide better safety and whatnot for women and make their lives comfortable and so on and so forth. We're definitely a lot better now. There's still less options for women than men.
Yeah.
So you did a PPE for women's fashion show recently. So
tell
me more about that and how did that come up and how did it make you feel? And I didn't go to that event, so I don't know, like, how much more PPE is that available for women now?
Yeah. So I am a special instructor at Thompson Rivers University, and I was up there teaching carpentry through Women Explore Trades class. And they had, when we were planning what projects we were going to work on, they said, oh, by the way, we have this fashion show for workwear for women. And I went, I don't need to hear anything more. Can I be a model, please? And it was so fun. And I felt like that was, without knowing what I want to do with my life, that was one of the things I wanted to check off the bucket list. So I'm going to start with when I first started in construction. Yeah, I wore jeans and tank tops. So that's kind of, you know, I'd have high-vis vests and sometimes they'd fit and usually they wouldn't. I could never wear the Carhartt pants. Those never worked for my body type. However, the Carhartt overalls, that's something that I've worn since the beginning of my career. A couple of years ago, Dovetail came out on the market, and they're based out of, I believe, Oregon, started by women, for women, all these things. And ever since I first started wearing Dovetail, that's all I've been buying because I love how they fit me. They have so many pockets. They're so comfortable. I feel good. I can move around in them. They last long. So big Dovetail fan. I actually did get to model a Dovetail outfit in the fashion show. My first outfit in this fashion show, they partnered, TRU partnered with Cover Gals, which I believe they're based in Ontario. So they do coveralls and overalls for women working in mining industries in particular. So the whole idea of when you're wearing overalls or coveralls as a woman, you need to almost fully undress to be able to use the washroom.
Yep.
And on some washroom facilities, or lack thereof, sometimes it can be very difficult to go to site without having to undress yourself in front of all your coworkers or out in the freezing conditions. So there's just butt flaps and all these different things built in, which make it more accessible for people to be able to do the job, but be safe and sanitary at the job instead of, you know, holding, you know, dehydrating yourself, holding your urine in all day because you don't want to have to go to the washroom or take the trek to the washroom or take off all your layers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that fashion show was amazing. There, I think, were about 10 tradeswomen from different trades, former students of TRU, instructors. We even had one had her little granddaughter, so they had her in a little Carhartt outfit. It was the cutest.
Oh, cute.
And, yeah, it was just a really great show of strength. And again, showcasing how far we have come with options, but how much further we still have to go. Even after this event, I was talking with some other tradespeople, and one was a guy. He's really tall and skinny, and he goes, I can't find workwear that fits me. So there is still a ways to go in terms of having diverse workwear for all sorts of body types, because all sorts of people work in the trades.
Yep, we're all the humans, they work in the trades. We all need proper fitting equipment.
Yep.
Yeah.
And safe, right? That's the big thing. We want everyone to be safe and not taking scissor lifts on the first day on the job.
With no training. So you kind of mentioned that you were an instructor with TRU. Mm-hmm. How did that opportunity come in for you?
So I started first as a sessional instructor at University of the Fraser Valley, UFV, and they had an Women Explore Trades program. I guess one of the students goes, well, why don't we have a woman teaching? And they said, actually, we've got a woman coming in to teach you carpentry. So one of my former instructors, when they were asked by the university, do you know any carpenters that are also women that might be a good instructor, they put my name forward. So that's how I originally was, Kate, can you come in for 2 weeks and teach our women how to be a carpenter? And yeah, I did it. I had so much fun. It was amazing. I was so grateful for that first group. And like I said earlier, when I came back from Germany, I thought about becoming a teacher. And I kind of ended up there just in a different way.
Yeah, for sure.
So from there, I came back to UFV a couple times, taught here and there. During the whole lockdown period, there was an International Women's Day virtual trades event thing. And I was speaking or on a panel with some tradeswomen, and the moderators were two women, Heather and Megan from Thompson Rivers University and their Women in Trades department. And I don't know, we talked, got to know each other kind of, that was it. A couple of years later, I'm at the Supporting Women in Trades conference, SWIT conference in St. John's, Newfoundland, and we meet for the first time in person. And I go, hey, aren't you those people? And I go, yeah, you're that girl. And they said, what are the chances that we can poach you from UFV? And I said, well, I don't have full-time work, so the chances are pretty good. So I've just finished my third session teaching for 2 weeks up at TRU for their Women in Trades program. And yeah, each time I go, it's just so beautiful and refreshing. And it's a very welcoming campus. They've got really great initiatives within their community. And yeah, we go out. When I'm with the TRU WIT class, we go out into community and we build projects on site. This last one, we just built a helicopter play structure and a barn and silo playhouse at a local daycare. Oh, so I want to set the scene. You come, it's a daycare. Depending on the time of day and the day, there's probably 30 to 50 kids at different points and ages throughout this, the different yards. So it's hectic, it's chaotic. It's so fun, the noise of children playing, also entirely overwhelming. So we have 15 women dressed in their workwear with their tool belts on coming every day, building, and the kids are coming and they're asking questions and they're going, what are you making? And of course, they ask you the same question 10 times in a row, but they really took an interest. They got to see the process evolve. Again, the whole representation matters. And for them, it was just, sweet, we're getting a playhouse. They didn't really care who was building it. It was, we're going to have something really awesome. But again, to have them seeing that it was all women, we had some of the early childhood educators go, this little child, their mom is an electrician. So already there's that, okay, we do have other women in trades now. There is a network being built. And I'll make sure to post and send some pictures to you of this, the projects that we built. They were probably the most fun. And I'm so proud of the whole group for building them. They turned out really incredible. And I've heard that the kids have been really enjoying playing around on them. So that's just, yeah, brings joy.
Great. Oh, yeah, perfect. Love it. So you also have a role as a trades navigator now. So you obviously, you're helping people to connect with a variety of resources and, you know, explain to them maybe what a career path might be, is my guess. Is that,
it's kind of broad. So yeah, there's a couple different facets to this job. So my position is funded by Coast Capital, and they've got all these great initiatives to help support people on their, you know, career to the Red Seal, the road to the Red Seal. I am here because of Coast Capital. I have an emergency fund to give to trade students here who are experiencing financial hardships. So often we have heard from apprentices who are eating rice and just rice for weeks on end, or sleeping in their vehicle. Or they might miss a couple of days of apprenticeship training because they've gone back to work because they have bills to pay. NEI isn't covering that all. Mm-hmm. And it's so important, especially with your technical training of apprenticeship, because it's a shortened time. There's so much information each day. We need you to be there.
Yep.
So Coast Capital has now provided us with this emergency fund to support trade students with, so that they don't have to worry about those things and they can focus on their education. So that has been an incredible plus. In terms of my day-to-day role, I go out to schools, local schools, and I tell them what a great life you can have if you go into a trades career, and just talk about what the different trades are. First off, what is a trade? What are they? What might a career in those look like? How do you get into it? You know, the different pathways, foundations versus apprenticeship, what to look for. At the university, I, again, meet with students when they need it. If we have explored trade students, I'm going to try and help them discuss what trade might fit them best. I work on student engagement, so just trying to plan some fun ideas and get students out of their trades, mingling with others. I know when I came through as a student, I left. Sure, I'd hang out with the guys in my class, but I wasn't talking to any of the other trades. Yep. And that's one thing with BCC Wit, I've realized the power of networking. Oh, and yeah. So I'm just, you know, let's have a pumpkin carving contest that we just wrapped up. Let's do all these things. Again, trades people were creative. We're also very competitive. So if we can have something to say, this is why carpentry is better. This is why plumbing is better. This is why it's fun. We like doing that. We like bragging. We like showcasing our capabilities.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So yeah. And then just chatting with industry and saying, what are you doing to support trades training? What are you doing to support diverse people? Where again, that retainment portion. Oh yeah, we hire people. They don't stick around. Okay. What are you doing to ensure that they stick around? What are you doing when they, if they come to you with a problem, how is that being dealt with, right? Just those kinds of.
Well, and like any business, you know, it's on the people running the business owners or management or whatever to, you know, create that company culture and make sure you engage with your staff and, you know, support them in whatever way that they kind of need supporting to a degree. You know, you can't handhold everybody all the time, but, you know, like to be able to support your staff. I mean, sometimes it just comes down to, you know, creating that container and all that. So people will stay for that, even if they might be able to earn a little bit more, maybe they have to drive a little further, whatever. If they know that they're going to be there, they're going to be supported, they're safe, they can speak freely, all that kind of stuff. I mean, all of those things that are like non-line items are really important to people.
Exactly.
No matter what sector you're in, like, and I've read a ton of like leadership books and all these things, you know, but you know, it really does come down to creating that experience for the company itself and people stay for that.
Yeah. And that was the last company I was working with before coming to UFE kind of on this contract. For the first time ever, I worked with another Red Seal female carpenter and I had a work wife and it was amazing. And
never had a work wife.
I know. We would rock out to ABBA when we were doing renovations. It was so great. And this company, they had a bunch of women in the field and it was just such a culture shift. And again, seeing that happening and just being able to connect with them on another level. I've worked with many guys over my career and most of them have been absolutely amazing. And, you know, you just have a bunch of big brothers and uncles. It's great.
I mean, I've had some really, really good experiences personally. And I've had some ones that, you know, were best. And I think that a lot of the other women that I've spoken with that have been on the show, you know, we all sort of talk about that and that, you know, you got to take the good, the bad, the ugly. And it's not just us, like you're saying, like, and when that job that you left where the guy was very inappropriate, like the original carpenter there, he was like I'm exiting stage left that, right? So he knew that something was not right there either.
Yes.
So it's not just women that have a problem having employers that are, you know, good humans.
Yeah.
I really do feel like, you know, we've made some advancements, you know, the safety, the PPE culture, you know, just basic things like washrooms, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's still a ways to go. There's still a bit of the old boys club or the, you know.
Yeah. Yep. There's still changes that will eventually maybe hopefully happen.
But also, you know, with women who carry the brunt of the majority of the domestic work, childcare, all that kind of thing, and having hours that will accommodate that. Mm-hmm. Daycares aren't open early enough or late enough. So I think there's some things in there that might need to be, I don't say adjusted necessarily, but just accommodated in a different manner. You know, whether, you know, it's a different.
Yeah, the awareness. And so many times, again, students or even dads, right? They're going, well, I might be a couple minutes late to class because daycare opens at 7:30.
Yeah.
Class starts at 8 and my daycare is 25 minutes away, depending on traffic, right? And again, I think just employees are starting to be more understanding of that, especially with the workforce that we have. We are desperate for workers.
Oh, absolutely.
And again, people with kids, they're wanting to work.
We are wanting to work.
But you know, sometimes finding childcare, I've spoken to many tradeswomen and tradesmen in the past couple of months about what a barrier finding childcare has been for them to be able to work. They want to work. They just, they can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So I feel like we've had a really great conversation. You're just such a lovely person. I can see how excited and how much energy you have for this and passionate you are. I love it. It's been really lovely speaking with you today.
Thank you.
So I'm going to ask one last question before we close out the show. So I want to know, what's your favorite tool and why?
Oh, my favorite tool is going to be my titanium stiletto hammer that my first boss bought me. We were on a road trip across Western Canada. It has served me well. He said, you're going to need something to go back to school with and look like you actually know what you're doing. Because apparently I didn't know what I was doing. No, he was joking.
Yes, I know.
But at that point, I bought the wooden handled stiletto as well, because every girl needs a good pair of stilettos, even carpenter girls. But I'm going to say my stiletto with the built-in side nail puller.
Nice.
Every time I teach, I'm teaching them how to pull nails with the nail bar, and then I bring out the hammer and I go, now check this out. So again, learning what physics can do to help you.
Oh yeah. So you're not busting your body up, right? You got to
exactly,
you know, half so, the skill around tools is to be able to make it work for you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, Emily, thanks again for joining me on the show. And I really can't even tell you, it was just such a treat to talk with you today. I wish you nothing but joy and success moving forward, whatever that ends up being. And I know even if I were to talk to you a year from now, there'll be something else that you've done or achieved or that you're thinking about doing. And I hope that we get to catch up again. So thanks for being on the show. I'm happy.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun. It's been great. And yeah, we should go for a coffee or a drink after.
Oh, 100%. And to those of you who are listening, thanks for being here. Really, like really, really appreciate it. And we're always looking for more women to interview. So please do connect with us. If you or anyone you know might be a good fit. We're also always looking for other people to talk to about renovation and all that kind of thing in our other series as well. So until that time, keep being badass at whatever trade you're in, and be sure to listen to the next one. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you feel as inspired as I do. If you or someone you know has interest in the trades, there are many resources, many programs and supports. There's also a ton of women's groups out there specifically for those who are in the trades. We'll list a number of them in the show notes, but be sure to reach out if you're having challenges finding some in your area. We're all in this together, after all, and we're happy to help in any way we can.